Well, it's lovely to be with you here, and I could tell last night when we're here in worship, I can sense such a soft heart among you, such a willing heart, a soft heart, a generous heart, and also the sense that you are faithful people. And I feel like you've been faithful before the Lord for a long time, and many of you are asking, Lord, if there's the next push, I'm only up for it if it's real. You know, we've all been around long enough that we've heard the hype, we've heard the stories, we mistrust, we're like skeptical very easily, and that you have energy to give, but there's a sense in which you're saying, if this is genuine, Lord, absolutely count me in, but if the stuff that's happening, you know, we're stepping back a little and watching. But I think we are in a time now that God is doing something right across our nation, that we are poised to join in with something. So I would encourage you, being a 50-something skeptic myself, that being a Christian for like 30-odd years, that we're in this together, and that God is doing something, so be ready. Also, I felt that there's somebody here who's been saying, Lord, this weekend is a make or break for me. I'm just deciding whether I'm going to continue with this or not. And God says he has plans for you. Don't give up. Hang on in there. Don't use this as an opportunity to say that's enough, but actually God hasn't finished with you yet. And someone else here, you've been saying for a while, I feel everyone else is overtaking me and I don't have anything left to give. And God says that you are going to be a person of influence, and maybe it's even going to be like armchair influence. There's a period of time where you're quite stationary, but God is going to use you powerfully, almost like armchair influence. So don't give up, don't underestimate what you have to give. Okay, so should we watch a little film first? I'd like to show you a little bit of what's happening in Swansea and around Wales, actually. I'm going to show you a little film of some people's healing stories. Now, across Wales, we started doing healing cafes. I'll explain that later. But the idea is to get our non-Christian friends along because non-Christians get healed so much quicker because they just don't have all the junk of the, is this real, is this real? Am I being healed? Am I not? Is this disappointment? But actually, they just believe what you say. They respond in faith and they get healed. So would you like to see a few little healing stories before we start? So the first guy is not a Christian. He came along to one of our healing cafes because his family were coming. He's not a Christian. He was kind of dragged along. That's the first guy. The second guy is a Christian. The third guy, also not a Christian, he had a horrible accident where he fell off a ladder and the bone kind of went through his foot. And so they were able to repair it with plates and screws and everything, but he's in agony all the time. And he'd just that week gone to a specialist and said, look, I know you rescued my foot, but I'm in pain all the time. And they said the only way to be pain-free now is to amputate your foot. So he came along to a healing cafe just to see what might happen. You'll hear his testimony. And then the lady on the end, who was somebody who'd been sort of going along to church for years, but not yet encountered the reality of God in her own life. So apart from the second guy, they're kind of all either non-Christians or on a journey. So let's have a look at four healing stories. Colin asked me if I would share a little bit of our story. And so I'm hoping it will inspire you. As I share this story, I think that everyone in this room will have also experienced the same grief or pain or loss or difficulty or challenge or highlights. And so this is a story about what God can do with nothing and how God takes nothing and produces something, how God uses ordinary people when we're willing and we just say, Lord, use me, here I am. And I'm sure that I hope that this story will encourage you if you're in a place of faith for something and looking for God to meet you, that this will inspire you. So Julian and I, we had been in itinerant ministry for about 7 years, and our role really mostly was helping either churches restart or helping churches with evangelism. So we go into a church, assess the area, talk to the team, train the team, do a mission, see people saved, encourage the church to, you know, assimilate those people into their congregation and move on. And after many years, we ended up, God called us to Swansea. And in Swansea, we started in the south south of the city. And there we did like a restart where we went to a church of about 10 or 12 elderly, faithful, prophetic, amazing people. But the church was dwindling into death, really, as each one died as the months went by. And so we came and our role was to regenerate that church. And we started in the south of Swansea. Now, if you ever visit Swansea, you'll probably only see the south, which is beautiful. This is Swansea Bay. It's been a lot of regeneration. And it's actually, you know, really beautiful beaches. I'm sure if you've ever been to the Gower, you'll have been down Caswell Bay, Langland Bay, Three Cliffs. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. And so God called us to Swansea. In the first few years, we're working in the south of the city. And then God called us to the north of the city. Now, as you know, every city or town has its north and south, or its east and west. And if you come along to Swansea and we take you for an ice cream or we take you to the spaghetti house, you can have a great time. But when you come up north, it's a whole different picture. And God moved us up to the north of the city. And here we encountered incredible poverty. You can see people just rename the streets themselves. Everything was broken down. And we found that there was no a real church expression in the north of the city. Lord, what are you doing? This is a sort of local transport system where people keep horses in their back garden. You can buy one off a friend for a pound. Sometimes one time one guy kept his horses in his flat in Penland Flats, and so the horse got stuck in the lift, and unfortunately the fire brigade had to come and sort that out. So we kind of moved into this area of chaos, and we started to do all the things churches normally do to reach out to the community, but we soon began to discover that those things didn't work. So we were doing missions and events, and I remember one event we put on, we had to exclude some boys who were just, they were just high, and they had a pit bull that they were like threatening other people with. So, you know, we encouraged them to go home, but when we left, we found they had gone home, taken the mattress off their bed, dragged it into the car park entrance and set it on fire. So now nobody could go in or out. And then another time we did an event for youth, and the poor guy who won the X Factor game or whatever it was we did, another gang was waiting for him in the car park, beat him up. Julian drove him home with blood running down his face to his parents. And we said, actually, maybe there's a different way that we need to reach this community, because we've been doing evangelism for many years, but now this was a grassroots, how do we reach this community? How, Lord, do you want us to, why have you put us here, and what do you want us to do? So when we started in, we pioneered the church in 1991. Well, this is just even 10 years later, the statistics. The statistics were dire. Because I need to use the clicker. I'm simultaneously looking at my own screen. Okay, so these are some of the statistics when we started. 60% of people don't own a car, so they haven't been to those beautiful beaches. One of our projects with young people, we took them in the sea. It's the first time this 15-year-old boy had been in the sea. He'd been in a swimming pool at the school before, and in the sea, the first thing he said was, "Oh, it moves." And this was a new experience. It's very strange. 7 out of 10 residents suffer as a victim of crime each year. At the time, crime was so high. And we'd rented all our years because we'd been very mobile and living on like fresh air and the Holy Spirit. And so when God eventually led us to buy a house, which was a miracle, I don't have time to tell you, but it was a miracle we bought this house. But it was a big old Victorian house, 3 stories, 13 rooms. We pioneered the church in. You'd been there, Andy, hadn't you? Because Andy knew us when we were first pioneering and came and sat in our house with Linda, and we had dinner. And during the time we were in that house for 7 years, we were burgled 16 times in 7 years on our house, our garden, our car. You know, it's relentless. There was terrible truancy. By the age of 14, children didn't go to school anymore. But from the age of 8 and 10, there's any excuse to not be in school. If your brother's come out of prison, you don't go to school. If it's a dog's birthday, you don't go to school. You know, if you had Rice Krispies for breakfast, that's a celebration, you don't go to school. So truancy was huge. Teenage pregnancy, we had one of the highest teenage pregnancy rates in Swansea in the whole of Western Europe. It's really dire. So I'm going to look at this screen instead of my screen. working age adults, look, 53% no qualifications at all. And so you can see how there's just this sort of plummeting poverty, where there's no economic activity there, where people are just, you know, the auntie doesn't have a job, mum doesn't have a job, dad, I never see dad. And so there's just this kind of spiral going on. And literacy and numeracy, you know, half the people can't read or write. You know, we worked with young people who in their teenage years still couldn't write their address properly. And it was the third, at the time, third most deprived ward in Western Europe for child poverty. I remember one of our projects going in, we ran an arts project in a school, and I went in on the last day just to see how the team were getting on. And I sat in there, and there's a little group of children, maybe 12 children in this class, sat in a circle. And as I looked around the circle, this is in the winter, not one child had a complete school uniform. So some have got the top handed down from a brother or sister that's too big, but they've got tracksuit bottoms. Another one will have proper school trousers, but just any old sweatshirt. And as I look around the group, many of those children didn't even have socks. This is in the winter, and there's just such poverty. And here we were landed into this situation going, oh, Lord, you better help us. What do we do? And so we started serving the community. Now, this is our house that we... after moving in a few months, it was still Victorian, no heating, no hot water in this big old house. That's just the front of it. It's one of those houses that goes back and back and back. And when we moved in, when we pioneered the church, November 91 on Bonfire Night, the very first meeting we had, somebody came up and threw something through the window and smashed the window. And we had this kind of opposition very early on, of kind of spiritual opposition. There was weird singing in the garden. You come down in the morning, you find a bonfire in the garden. We found, like, where they, you know, put curses on tapes, wound around the trees and the perimeter, things carved into our trees. There was real, like, spiritual attack to try and close us down. We started serving the community and working in schools and projects and running things, even without having a building. And I remember one guy turning up about 6'4" on the doorstep one day and trying to threaten me and intimidate me that we would close the church down. And so we started the church in this kind of situation of, we ourselves had gone from poor to extremely poor, sliding into poverty ourselves, because we kind of bought this house. It was a miracle, but now we had to pay a mortgage and weren't earning any money. So we were serving in a community that we really understood. We'd been itinerant for 7 years, but some of the people who sponsored us over the years gave up at this point because they thought we were completely mad, which I think we were a little bit, but God told us to do it, so we were willing. But as we were serving this community, we found that very often we couldn't eat every day and feed the children. We had 2 children at the time and later a third. And so often we would just turn it into a fast, because we would perhaps go 30 days without being able to eat. And so we would feed the children. So we'd always buy, like, porridge oats. If we had money, we'd buy porridge oats and potatoes, because you can live on that for a very, very long time. And you never need to diet, because, you know, you're running around everywhere and you're living on so little. So it was great in those days. Didn't have to watch the pounds so much. But it was a hard time. So I remember one time we did this event and people were saying, oh, I've got to rush home, the chicken will burn. And we're like, chicken. And one time a student came and joined us, and as everyone went home, as the church was growing, Gina said, we better invite the student to stay for lunch. You know, he's just a brand new convert. And I was like, goodness knows what we got for lunch. And so we made fish finger sandwiches. And I'm pleased to tell you that along the Thames now, this is a trendy dish. But I invented it, okay? Mother of invention. And so, you know, it was hard during those years, but God was amazing and faithful. And I remember our first Christmas in pioneering. It came up to Christmas and, you know, it was cold and we had no money. We had 2 children. Coming up to Christmas, we had nothing. And it was about 5 days before, and a lady in the church who was a brand new Christian, and her husband had got saved, and Julian started meetings in their house, and gradually more and more people were getting saved. And she came over to the house, and people would just walk into our house. And she walked in, cup of tea, sir? So I was on the settee doing some preparation, and I said, sure. And as she walked out to the kitchen, I thought, oh yeah, well, actually, there is no tea, and there is no milk, But I didn't want to say anything. So she came back from the kitchen with two mugs of cold water. She said nothing. I said nothing. We drank our mugs of cold water. We had a little chat. Off she went. This is, you know, 5 days to Christmas. Well, 2 days before Christmas, she and her husband turn up. And they'd been to Asda. And they bought us a turkey. They bought presents for the children. They wrapped them up. The children had a present each. And it was amazing. And it's like God really, really provided for us during this time. But the thing I learned is this. People used to say to me early on in our ministry, God will always provide. It might be 5 to midnight. It might be 1 minute to midnight, but God will provide. Well, I found it's jolly well 2 in the morning sometimes before he provides. And so, you know, if you're in that situation, don't think God doesn't care, because he's teaching you something. And he taught us that there is more important things than food, there's more important things than comforts, more important things than being warm. I mean, we did sometimes as a family live in one room to keep warm. But God sometimes is doing something radical in our hearts that is beyond our comfort. I remember one time we hadn't eaten for about 5 days, and Julie and I went for a walk down by this river. And we were walking, we just at the same time really felt God challenge our hearts deeply and say, do you love me more than food? And he didn't just mean, you know, your next meal, but really, what is your existence here? Because there had been times when we'd come back from church and I was hungry, and I'd go upstairs and I'd say to Julian, what's going on now? Is God providing? And he said, do you have breath in your lungs? I'm like, yes, I'm exercising them now. And he's like, well, God's still providing while you have air in your lungs. So anyway, we walked down by this river and we felt God challenge us deeply, do you love me more than food? In other words, are you still abandoned? God called me at 19, he called Julian at 19. We abandoned our lives to him, and he's saying, you know, now, even now, with children, with this mortgage to pay, are you abandoned? And we said, yes, Lord, we are. And at that moment, we felt like silver rain. It was like silver rain from heaven, just walking in his presence. I'd like to say we went home and a check turned up, but actually that did happen 3 days later. But like I said, sometimes it's 2 in the morning. So here we are pioneering in this church. There was just Julian and myself and 7 young people. And we're pioneering from scratch. We are part of Pioneer. In fact, we went to see Gerald at one of the early conferences, and when we were involved in the Restart Church, and we sat down with Gerald and said, we were in our kind of mid to late 20s, and we said, look, you know, we're doing this restart. We've been doing it 3 or 4 years. We kind of get the impression we've taken the church as far as we can. You know, we've redecorated, we've restructured, we've done everything. And Gerald said 3 things, and one of them was, how long are you going to stand around trying to move your church on an inch when God has clearly called you to church planting? You should just go and do it. So we drove back, spoke to the elders, and they said, be released. That is exactly right. You have taken us as far as we want to go, and you can now leave amicably and go off and plant that church in the north of the city. So that's how we did, and that's why it was just a few of us. So anyway, a few years in now, we're serving the community, we're using other people's facilities, we're working with other people, the church is growing. And when there was about 30 of us in the church, and we're in an area, remember, where most people now are like, you know, work in a shop or a hairdresser's, or if they've been to college, they might work in the council. But we, you know, we're just a group of young people. And Julian came home and he said, I've seen a building. I think we should buy this building and jump in the car now and come and see. Now, at this period of time, we were earning £35 a week. And the church was paying rent on a place, £25 a week. Now, it's really lovely, this place. It's called Penlan Community Centre. All breeze blocks, no windows. And so we were considering, could we move somewhere a bit nicer? And we had just moved to another place that had some smashed windows with cardboard, but at least there was windows. And so we were just considering, would we move? Anyway, he comes back and he says, you've got to see this building. So we drive around the corner and we go and see the old post office, sorting office. And here it is in our community. It kind of blends in nicely with the community. It's been empty for a few years, so it's completely gutted and vandalized in a terrible state. And our hearts quicken within us. We go, do you know, we think we should buy this building and bring all our community work into one place. We still do stuff out there, but we can gather it into one place. Let's do that. And so we got the church together, all 30 of us, who, you know, we hardly earn anything between us. We got the church together and we said, we think we should buy a building. And everyone went, yeah. And we said, we think we should buy it together and pay for it. And everyone went, yeah. And we said, how are we going to do that? Everyone went, I don't know, but let's do it. And so, you know, we started to pray and everyone sacrificed. If people were saving up for a car, they gave that instead. If they were saving up for a holiday, they gave that instead. We all went on like a reduced diet so we could put our food money in. Even, because most of it was young people, even some of the young people's non-Christian parents started giving to it because they were like, oh, my kids aren't eating here, I have some money. And so gradually we raised enough money. Was it £30,000, £35,000 to buy it. So this is back in 96. So we raised the money. It was a miracle. People absolutely sacrificed and gave. And so we bought the building. It's incredible. So then we bought this building. We had no money to refurbish it because now we're all broke. So we have a building. And then people started to leave us, especially older people who were retired and had a bit of money put by. They didn't really want that drained away. And they were like, can't we have a work party? Can't we all get in there and clean it? But it needed total refurbishment. So 2 years tick by while we're trying to maintain this building and just keep faith and everything. And then Julian went to preach in someone's church. And when he was there, he talked about how he felt called to Penland. Now, if you live in Swansea, everyone knows Penland, Blindamice, Clace. They are not where you want to live. So anyone pioneering up there deserves your sympathy. And so when Julian was sharing some of our stories, somebody came up after and said, you know, when I was young, that's where I lived. And now I've made it. I'm a self-made businessman. I'm really interested to know what you've been doing. I'd love to come up and see your building. So Julian said, sure. They arranged a time. And Julian showed him around the derelict, vandalized, dripping wet post office. It was a post office sorting office. And he showed him around. And he said, well, how much money have you got to do it up? Well, at that time, we had gone back to the church and raised another £15,000. Now, these people are sacrificial. When Julian felt the Lord say, we need to raise more money, go back to the people, he said, Lord, I can't go back to the people. No, I can't. And the Lord said, no, you need to. And the church had grown a bit by now. We may be 45 people. And so Julian went back, and when he talked about it, do you know what everyone's reaction was? They applauded. They applauded the opportunity to give sacrificially again. Amazing. And we raised £15,000. That is a lot of money for a little church in those days with no, like, you know, wealthy people. And so then Tier Fund had matched it and also given us £15,000 match funding. So we had £30,000, but to refurbish the building, we needed £90,000 to £100,000 because it was completely, you know, derelict in there. So anyway, Julian shows this guy around, and he has a look all around the building, and then he said to Julian, how much have you got to refurbish the building? And he said, well, we've got 30,000. And this guy turned to him and said, well, my business is refurbishing buildings, and I will do it all for what you've got. Amazing, sir. So he did, which was amazing because it was three times the price. And he came in and he refurbished the building. Would you like to see a little before and after? Okay, so this is our Penland building, and this is the before and after, and before and after, and before. This is where they used to park the post office vans, and after. Okay, so that was, I'll just go back. It's amazing what God does, isn't it? So it truly is something out of nothing. And we still have that building now. And we use it every single day for the community. The community are getting saved. They're getting taught. They're getting educated. They're getting healed. And we're right there in the middle of that community. And in the beginning, there was such hostility to us. Remember one time we were invited into somebody's lounge, a resident. And we were grilled by all the local people. And they had a camera angled up on a bookcase. I don't know what they were going to do with the footage. And, you know, videoing us. And we might incriminate ourselves. But now, the church has been going 25 years, and we are now part of people's local life. We are part of the community, and people that we reached who were children and youth are now coming back to us as parents with their children and youth, and we are a firm friend. We are a part of people's lives in the community. And so what we did next is that some of the things that we were doing around the community, we started doing with a greater intent. So one of the things we'd always been compassionate for was the young people in our area, because we were a very young church. We were all in our 20s and 30s. Well, those who were in their 30s were considered really old, because we were just, you know, we had just tipped into 30 by this time, and some of the younger people thought we were well past it. And so here we are, a group of young people reaching young people in our area. And we found that the young people were dropping out of school by the age of 14, 15, getting involved in crime, teenage pregnancy, drugs, and adding to this downward spiral in the area. So we decided that one of our priorities should be to reach the young people in our area. And so we invented this project called The Gap. And The Gap ran for 13 years. And we don't need to run it anymore, because we were able to, through good practice, influence education in our area, in our city and county, that this is now available to every young person. And so it was something that was unique at the time, and 13 years later it was adopted that it would become part of alternative curriculum for young people. But at the time that we started, there was no alternative curriculum. Children were either in school or out of school, outside the system. And so Julian really came up with this idea of, was there a different way to educate the young people? These young people who were fighting and wrecking our meetings and burning things, how could we get alongside them and help them start a new life? So we invented The Gap, and it was called The Gap because there was a gap between school and further education or work. And these kids were just like dropping down the gap. And we said, could we as a local church possibly plug that gap? Is there something we could do? And so we invented an education course, and the headmistress of a local school was very brave to disapply the curriculum to some of her worst lovely children. And so every year we would skim off from two schools the 15 most challenged, the most disadvantaged, the most marginalized, charming young people from those schools, and then we would work with them for a whole year. And over 13 years, we had 2,000 young people go through our system, and it totally changed the landscape in our area, brought the crime rate down by 25%, and you now park a car safely, and burglary has gone down too. It's just amazing what God will do. So this is a little bit of the project. It was helping young people with kind of indoor and outdoor education, to engage them, motivate them, change their way of thinking, that they have a hope for life, that they can do it. We turned truancy on its head. Kids who weren't going to school at all were now doing 93%, 95%, 99%, 100% attendance through the course. And we were getting them employment ready. So it needs to be job ready, how to get up, wash, turn up on time. We taught the boys out of shave, the ones who were lucky enough to be growing anything, and we taught the young people how not to get pregnant, how to manage a conversation without swearing or being abusive, how to do something productive with their time, and then go home on time. Because one of the problems is some of them would get into jobs but not leave at the end of the day. Home life was so dreadful. They don't want to go home. So then they get into trouble and mischief because they're not supposed to be there. And so it was teaching them. Many of them got up to 19 qualifications at level 2 with Open College Network. We became an accredited training center. All our staff became trained, and then we got invited as a church all over the UK to go and speak in conferences in various capital cities, in secular conferences where we'd be speaking to management in business and education, and there'd be four speakers of the day, and I'd usually be the after lunch speaker, which is always a dreaded slot, and I would be there, everyone would be in suits, and I would come fresh from The Gap. In the end, I bought a little suit, like I looked like I knew what I was doing, and I would be trembling at the front, and I would be there, and I would just present all the statistics, some case studies and statistics of what the church is doing. So although it's us as Cornerstone, I would say that churches all across the land are working with children and youth, which they are. And always at the end of the presentation, one of the suits would put their hand up and say, is there a church near me who can do this? And so it's putting the church on the map. And what happened through some of the projects that we were doing, it encouraged other churches to do projects. And right across Wales, we began to teach on how to get funding, how to mobilize volunteers, how to work with excellence, how to release your people, how to serve your community, how to engage. And all over Wales, churches began to engage with their community. And I know for you, all across England, churches are doing that. And Julian and Care for the Family and EA and Tear Fund set up a group called Gweini, which is Welsh for to serve. And it's the Council of Christian voluntary work represented into the Welsh Assembly. And so the Welsh Assembly became aware that there were Christians all over the land making a difference to their community. So in the end, Gweini initiated a study, and they the Welsh Assembly financed a study right across Wales to find out the contribution of faith work to the nation. And they found out that millions and millions and millions of pounds worth of work was done by the church, and suddenly the position of the church was elevated in our nation, where the church had a voice, was no longer irrelevant, doing our own thing in a corner, but totally engaged with our community. And I really believe that has ploughed the ground for the things that we're seeing now. So here's some of the young people. We did indoor and outdoor activities, and here's some of them out in the workplace. Here's Warren. Warren, you'd usually find him out on the streets drinking, but he was totally rehabilitated through the gap. And we did a study once the gap ended to find out, where are these young people now? It's all very well having results, you know, the minute they've ended the course, but where are they 5 years later, 8 years later, 10 years later? And we did this study, and we found for the boys, the majority were still out at work contributing to the community, and for the girls, just over half were. Sadly, I would say about 40% of the girls were in very abusive situations that, you know, they were out of for a time, but not permanently. But mostly, these young people totally changed the area in which they live. And now they bring their children along to our other projects. So here's some of the other young people. These young girls, these are the sort of girls who would walk behind you with a lighter and set your hair on fire behind you. They trashed all the school toilets. They were notorious in the area. They were terrible bullies. People were frightened of them. They lived in your street. You didn't go out if you saw them on the street. Totally changed through the project. They now all work in an old people's home. You know, you would put your parents lovingly and kindly in this home. And the matron of the home said to us, she said, if you have any more young people like these, send them to me because they are excellent. So their lives were changed. This is Sarah. Many of these young people, they got parents who have split up and left them with like a partner who's not even the mum or dad. And they just get passed around, end up with an auntie or somebody who doesn't want them. They're just smoking dope every night. They're so depressed. And yet they have an ambition, you know, to be a hairdresser or to be a plasterer. And through the gap, they're able to realize that goal. This young man, Craig, here, he was a very special person in our area, let's put it that way. He was part of many of the burglaries that happened. Confidentially, he told us things that he was responsible for, not things that we had to report. And his life was totally changed, and he was determined to have 100% attendance. I remember one day he missed the gap bus, and he ran all the way the 2 miles to our centre not to miss a day. He realized his ambition of being a plasterer after a little accident on his hand. He couldn't do that anymore. So he ended up working for a security camera firm. And now he spends his life catching people on the other side of the camera. I love the irony of that. Towards the end of the project, as the project was coming to an end, and the world had been aware of this project for a long time, the Christian world became aware of us as we were closing and started to make some films and stuff. And so the EA and Tear Fund have films of some of our work. And Craig is on one of those films, smiling about how these days he's on the other side of the camera and how the gap changed his life. This guy, Daniel, this is where some of the healing began, because we've always seen healing, because we believe in healings. So we've always seen healing here and there. And I say out of every, 10 people we prayed for, one would be healed. And so, but when we started working in the community, we were seeing 2 out of 10, 5 out of 10, 8 out of 10, till it was 9 out of 10 non-Christians we prayed for would just be healed in a moment. No band, no atmosphere, no ministry team, just you and another person offering prayer, and they would be healed. Daniel was one such person. He one day couldn't concentrate on his lesson. He had terrible toothache. And I said, open your mouth, Daniel, let me see. Well, these kids, you know, they are not cared for. They're terribly neglected. He opened his mouth. It's like the black hole of Calcutta in there. And I thought, well, no wonder he has toothache. You know, there is no oral hygiene. He was in a mess. So I said to him, well, look, There's nothing I can do for you. I'm not allowed to give you paracetamol. But this isn't part of the lesson now. This is just me, Sarah. But can I pray for you? It's the only thing I could do. And he said, yes, miss, pray. And so I said, well, stand up. He's very tall. As you can see, I'm not very big. And I said, let me put my hands on your shoulders. And I prayed a prayer for him. And at that moment, the lesson changed because we're doing lessons in circuits by this time because they can only concentrate for like 15 minutes. So they went off to the next lesson. I forgot all about it. At lunchtime, they got in the bus to go off surfing. And as the bus reversed out the car park at Penlan, I always used to like to stand there and wave them off. I'm so glad I'm not going surfing. I'm so glad I'm not getting a wetsuit. Bye-bye. See you later, boys. I'm going to my nice warm office now. And as they backed off, the minibus stopped and Daniel ran back. And he said, miss, I forgot to tell you. All the pain has gone. And straight away, it's all gone. But more amazing than that, 2 years later, his brother came on the gap. And one day, we kind of stood by a radiator waiting for them to go out, and I was chatting to his brother. And he said, all our street know about Daniel, because he was notorious for toothache, because his teeth were so bad. He never, ever had toothache again. That's a miracle. He never, ever had toothache again. Okay, so here's a number of them out at work now. There's Craig at the bottom working for Camera Tech with his security systems. And so we were in the Times Educational Supplement. We did work for the Children in Need. We did work for the BBC. And so this little church plant of hungry, committed to Jesus people started to have a national impact in the area of education, talking about what can be done with young people, where people realized that actually the factor that made the difference was the Jesus factor, because many councils I would go and train and speak to knew that they had hired many youth workers with many schemes, but actually there was something different about church, and it made a huge difference in our area. And we started winning awards. In fact, we won so many awards, in the end they just didn't put us into the award, because we would always win it. And we won awards to community regeneration for the whole area and for youth work and various things that really began to put the church on the map and change the atmosphere. These are some of the other projects that we run at the moment. The gap came to a close, and it needed to. It was the right timing. These are some of the other things. We work with young mums and dads with their children. There's not a lot of communication and play that goes on, and they need help. And so this runs every single Tuesday, and out of it we run a mum's alpha as well, where mothers can come and start to learn about the gospel, and then they come along to the other things we do. We run several football clubs. Football is like a universal language, isn't it? And so we run many different football clubs. We just started an under fives last year. And we've seen dads healed through that, who come along, they bring their kids, they don't want to go home. I remember one project we ran, like a homework club. There's a woman with two very interesting twin boys, and she would come along, and in the end she'd say to me, can I just sit at the back, because this is the only hour I can find peace. There's something in this place that I can feel peace. And there's another guy with homework club. We used to get this guy turn up in a different car each week. I don't know whose cars they were, but he would turn up in the car park with a rather flashy car beyond his means, and that's not my business, but he would be very skinny, smoking, shaven head, tattoos, piercings, and I would hang out in the car park and chat to the parents while the children were in homework club. I remember one week chatting to this dad. He would come every week, and he's gradually beginning to soften. And one week I chatted to him, and the homework club was to help children do their homework, because at home there's no pens, there's no pencils, there's no colouring, there's no felts, there's no computers, there's no books, the family can't read, so obviously they're getting into trouble for not doing their homework, but actually they are just surviving life by the skin of their teeth. So this dad one day, he said to me, had tears in his eyes, and he said to me, I want to tell you what this church has done for my family. He said, last week Stephen came home with a gold star for reading, and he said, nobody in our family has ever had a gold star. This week, we did this Father's Day barbecue on a Monday night. It's no good doing it on a Sunday, because the because there's so many broken families, the kids are off with the other dad or the other mum on the weekend, so it's got to be done on a Monday. And we had this barbecue on Monday, and we asked someone to do a craft for the children, and they had this idea of doing sort of like foam ties with stickers on with I love my dad or something. Horrendous. Lovely for the kids, lovely. And there was two holes that you could put a string in. Well, we had dads off the estate. I got the photo, but I couldn't get it on my computer. We had dads off the estate, right? Rough dads, piercings, if you met them, you know, if you even queued up in the chip shop, you'd think twice, right? These dads wore the ties. They walked around the barbecue with the tie. You know, they never had a you are the best dad. They never had affirmation that they are a good dad. And these big beefy, they were wearing I love you dad foam ties. It's just amazing. So it's love. So Gap Food, the Welsh Assembly approached us and a few other people. Could we do this project, Gap Food? And it was about helping children in our community understand about real food and eat it. Because, they order a pizza from the place next to the chip shop. They don't know what the bits on the pizza are. So we teach about mushrooms and peppers and fruit. And we had one 10-year-old boy ate his first banana in our Gap Food Club. The thing that surprises them the most, they don't realize that corn grows on cobs. They think it comes in tins. They're always absolutely stunned when you produce a corn on the cob. And so what has happened, these young people, as we're working with all these children, young people, and the different projects, as they're growing up, we've had to invent new projects and new things. So now our youth work has really, really grown from about, 8 young people to now there's like 60 young people, that half of which are non-Christians, because they've come through the different clubs. And now our youth group isn't a hang out and play table tennis, but it's a full-on Christian youth club that these children are hungry and getting saved all the time. And now we had to invent something we've called Gap Extra because there wasn't a club for a certain age, and these kids were coming through Gap Food and there's nothing else to go to. So we invented another club just before youth, because some of the youth getting saved had younger brothers and sisters and they wanted to come. So Gap Extra is a full-on like old-fashioned Bible club, and these young people are getting saved and touching their parents. So now when we put on special events, it's full of non-Christians. And whereas in the beginning, you think you put on an event, but it's full of Christians, now we're putting on an event, we've got to make sure there's enough Christians there to chat to all the non-Christians. And so it's really changed what's happening in the community. Okay, so that's Gap Food, Gap Wednesday, a number of things. So then we decided to set up a charity shop in Morriston High Street. And this was so that as a church, when we finish with things, or even things we just want to donate, that there's affordable, good quality clothing for people in our community. So they can come and buy something really nice that would cost £25 in Next, but is a pound in the charity shop. So we set that up in the High Street. And then one day, Julian drove past a building. Now, as a leadership team, we're like always a little bit afraid of letting Julian out. Because he eats vision for breakfast. And so Julian drove past, in Morriston, another building, and it's an Aldi supermarket. And suitably for our record, it was totally vandalised, derelict and everything. And we looked into buying it, and we went to the church, and we said, look, what was happening is that our church was too big to meet in Penlan anymore on a Sunday. So we wanted to keep the building for all our community work and there every day. But for a Sunday expression, we tried going to multiple meetings. That worked for a year till everyone was too tired and like, I just can't do this anymore. And we needed a bigger place. We'd looked at many different places, and eventually we landed on this one. It was a lot of negotiation, but we went to the church and we said, look, I know this is beyond us, but many of you who've come on the journey with us now, you hear about the old days when like 30 of us bought Penn land between us. And now, guess what? It's your opportunity to be part of a brand new vision that we're going to buy a second venue. So we called it Venue 2 because it's our second venue and because it's not the home of the church. The church is the body. You know, the church is the people. We're a group of people, we're a community, and we kind of straddle two buildings. And And so we went to the church. The church said, yes, that's brilliant. And we had a meeting together where we all literally brought flour and oil to the meeting in little jars and everything. And we kind of presented it to God and we got like messy with it. And we said, Lord, we know that we're just bringing the little we have, our flour, our oil, buying now an Aldi supermarket for... Yeah, how much was it? Yeah. Okay, it was originally on the market for £3 million. Yeah. that's what we did. And we bought it for £650,000. Yeah. Now, for us as a little church, £650,000, again, was a huge leap. And people were incredibly sacrificial. And so it's amazing that between us as a church, we actually bought this building. We bought it. And so there's three phases of the building. We completed phase one, and there's a phase two and a phase three. And by that time, we'll be adding an extension, I'm sure. So would you like to see a little before and after? Okay, here we go. So... this is explaining why we've got two centres, Cornerstone in Penlan, all our projects, our youth, children, our offices and everything. And venue two is for Sundays, massive parking, special events, a cafe bar, that's phase two, breakout rooms and conferencing. There's also a mezzanine floor up there and there's stores at the back, but none of those are completed yet. But, you know, I'm sure they will be at some point. So here we are. This is... So this is how it was at the beginning. So suitably for Swansea, the entire contents had been gutted and people had taken anything that was of any value, copper piping, plugs, light bulbs, fittings, everything. The whole place, you know, was completely stripped. We started refurbishing in July. And I'll just run through. Here we go. This is our son, Matthew. Somebody kindly put, crack a smile. You know, they put that on the shutters. So that was really a nice kind of welcome from the community. That was really nice to welcome us in that way. So this is the inside. And again, we just look at this with eyes of faith. And I want to encourage you, maybe there's something in your life that looks like that. Right? And you've got to have an eye of faith for what God's going to do with it. So here we go. This was just starting to gut the inside. New shutters, new front. Go, taking shape. It's the coffee shop taking shape. The hall, the inside. And then putting the signage up. This is almost finished. And this was in time for, in the May, we were going to have a New Wine Wales conference. And so it's nothing like having a deadline for builders, is there? I'm sure you've all been in that boat. So the paint was still drying on the walls. And we're trying to get it ready for this conference. And this is the other thing to say with this, is that during this time across Wales, is that there was such a unity between people. Now, in Wales, there's a big divide between north and south. And even east and west, because there's a lot of differences. And it's like a different tribes in the nation. And historically, north, south, east and west haven't got on. But during the last 5 or 6 years, Julian and a friend of ours, Bruce, started to travel across the country and meet with leaders. And we found that we were all in the same place of desperation to see change. And that all these people knew, you know, many of us from Gwaney and other things, and that they were already ploughing in their community through community projects. And it's like the time was ripe. And under New Wine Wales, it's kind of an umbrella where we've been able to pull together over 600 leaders in Wales of all different denominations. And we divided the nation into seven areas. And in those areas, leaders meet together six times a year to share and talk and strategize and worship and support one another. And then those of us on the exec team, there's about six of us, we will tour the network. So Julian have a message, he's doing one at the moment on five 5 fruitful leadership decisions. So he will take that talk and take it round all the networks. I did one recently on missional tools, and I took that round the networks. And then Bruce will do something on a kingdom intensive and take it round the networks. And so we are connecting with these networks all around the nation of Wales. And then once a year, we all come together for a national conference where the networks come together. There's a great family feel because we're doing something together. It's not just a conference you book into as a delegate, but it's people who have like a journey together. And so we are seeing huge change in Wales. The unity, the buy-in, the friendship is incredible. And when there's unity like that, what God can do anything. It's just amazing. So between us all over the last few years, that's how we've been able to develop healing cafes across the nation and teach on healing, see healing happening in venues where you just kind of do like a pop-up cafe and you invite people in and have a couple of secular songs and coffee and just words of knowledge and people get healed. I mean, the first 3 we did, we saw 90 people healed in just 3 healing cafes. And so there's great things happening across the nation. And every time we have one of these conferences, I'm stood there in the front. I am like trying not to cry at what I've seen God do in the last 30 years since we pioneered a church with 7 young people and no money and empty tummies and hungry and tired. And then you standing in the middle of something, you see what God does out of nothing. So going back to venue 2, here we are trying to get it all ready desperately in time for May. And then the chairs came in. This was such an exciting moment. It started to look like less of a warehouse and more like a venue, and putting the chairs in, and then there was our first conference. I think it was, do we have Randy Clark that time? And we just all worshipping God. There's 650 leaders there from all across Wales, just worshipping God on the very first time we used the building. And I remember standing at the front and just having to go out of the doors at the back because I was just in tears. I was like, Lord, you do amazing, amazing things. When you say give to this, you're like, give what? or you know, give your time to this. Really, am I adequate for the task? And God has just used a very ordinary group of people to start to bring change and to link up with other ordinary people with an extraordinary story of what God is doing all across the nation. And so that was our first conference. We just had our another one last weekend before we came up here now. This was venue 2. And so years ago in the local paper, when we took over the GPO sorting office, they put a big article in the paper about us posting souls or something really cringy. And so we were waiting for what they would do this time because we invited them to our big opening. Church has converted old supermarket site. And we had a big opening for the community with a bouncy castle. And because it used to be an oldie, we did a freebie to give away that we had bags for life with venue 2 on, and we had trolley tokens with venue 2, and everyone had a cake, and you know, it was more like a big festival really, that it was just putting that stamp on it. This is something God will use for people and for people out there. And so this is our just part of our entrance where it says welcome. And we feel that we're just on a journey. I don't know what is going to happen next with us and with what God is doing in Wales. But there's a sense in which God is building bridges to people. And when we started out, we had this little logo of a bridge that we felt our calling as a church was to build a bridge between the community of faith and people who had none, that they could find their way to Jesus across the bridge. And our role was just to build that bridge in whatever way we can. And so with our new building, the front says, well, welcome Croeso, that for every person, it's not just to be in a building, but that for all of us as a community of faith, that we are working out every day, working out our faith every day with friends and neighbours and relatives and at work, that the news of Jesus and his power and his change, his transformation in people's bodies and lives will be seen across Wales. So that's just a little story to share with you, because I think that's about my thing. So let's pray together of how amazing God is, how amazing he is, and how he does something from nothing. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, I am amazed at what you have done. I am amazed. And Lord, every person here has their own story of what you have done. You are amazing in our lives, of change and transformation, of being there, of all we have been through, And Lord, we know that we are on the brink of something fresh in our day, in the UK. We can hardly believe that it's going to happen. But Lord, I pray on the basis of all that you have done before, that you'll help each and every one of us in our hearts to look with excitement to what you have next. I pray, Lord, help us not to hold back in this season, but to be ready for whatever you call us to. And I know that there's, you know, many of you sitting here today, and you, this is kind of your story in a parallel, and your hearts are burning within you for what is next. And God says that you are more than able, that you have more than you need, because he is the eternal resource, that we don't need to say, but I don't have enough, or I'm not skilled enough, or I'm too old now, or any of those things that hold us back. But the Lord is saying, yes, that burning in your heart is me, and I'm going to use you, and you will be part of what is to come. So, Lord, we thank you, and we give you all the glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
Wow, that is amazing, isn't it? And we prayed at the end of our worship, I am forever yours. And that's the results when we're forever his. Incredible, really inspiring. I'm challenged down to the soles of my feet. Thank you, Sarah.